Hello, everybody, and welcome to this newest edition of our podcast. My name is Lisa Chomet, and today I will be your host podcast. And actually, today is quite linked to this conversation, is quite linked to our year-long project at Charity Digital, which we have covered around climate change. Because according to the report that we recently published, the climate change in the UK charity sector, we found that almost 9 in 10 charities, 88%, are concerned about the impacts of climate change, and 71% expect to be affected or are already affected by the impacts of climate change in their mission, even on the beneficiaries they serve. Yet, only 52% of charities include environmental sustainability in their strategies. And respondents rated the sector's sustainability effort as a whole as only 6 out of 10. So it's clear that as a sector, we want and need to take action. But where can we start? Where there's so much already going on from a fundraising and funding pressure perspective, we see increasing demand from our service users and beneficiaries. But, you know, there's quite a lot of great ideas and inspiration abound. And today, my two esteemed guests will help us and help you, dear listeners, understanding more how charities can take action when it comes to climate change. I am joined by our two lovely guests. We've got Sila Ugulu, Trustees and Chair of Risk Committee at British Youth Council, and Alison Gauman, who's board member at the City Bridge Foundation and lead for the City Bridge Foundation Climate Steering Group. Welcome to you both. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Obviously today and in that conversation we'll hopefully you know, give some tips and discuss how digital technology can fit into climate action efforts, the state of the sector as a whole, and how charities can overcome challenges in tackling climate change and becoming more sustainable. So a great program for all of us. And I thought I'd dive straight in and, you know, looking forward to hearing more of both of your experiences. So how has digital technology featured in your work around tackling climate change and all becoming more sustainable? Perhaps, Alison, you want to get started?
Sure, thanks so much, Lisa. I mean, I don't know whether it would help just to say a few words about the City Bridge Foundation.
Definitely,
because
that
might not be, you know, on the tip of everybody's tongues. We are a fairly large foundation and endowment. We're connected to the City of London Corporation, who's our charity trustee. So we're an endowment fund that both looks after the 5 bridges in the City of London. So that's slightly unusual for a charity. But we also, with our foundation funds, endowment funds, we spend about £30 million a year on grants across Greater London. So my experience is very much rooted in Greater London and that experience of the people that we serve in London. So as a large endowment fund, our challenges as an individual charity is around how can we tackle climate change. And the areas that we've got to look at is, first of all, the bridges. So that's Tower Bridge, London Bridge, Southwark Bridge, Blackfriars Bridge and Millennium Bridge. Now, you may not think about them as sort of big users of energy and embodied carbon, but of course they are, especially Tower Bridge, which is a moving bridge, as you'll know. So, you know, that's one strand of work that we're looking at. We're also looking at our investments. We have approximately £1.6 billion of investments in both property, commercial real estate, and in financial investments. So obviously those all come within our footprint of emissions. And then we look at what we're doing with our funds, in the money that we give to our grantees, to our beneficiaries, to our partners that we're working with, and how we can use that money to help them with their carbon footprint, tackling climate change, both in terms of their own operations, but also what they're doing as a charity, because obviously many charities have environmental and climate issues or education around that is very much their focus. So we can look at sustainability in a very, very wide number of ways. And because we are extremely fortunate to have a fairly large fund can I say, compared to most people. You know, we are able to be able to use that ability, and you know, it would be a pity if we didn't actually use it very much to make sure that we can do the best that we can. And we have a very strategic and quite demanding climate action strategy. We want to be net zero for our direct operations by 2027. And all our operations, including our scope three, so it includes all our investment area and our full value chain, by 2040. And in fact, we're trying to bring that earlier than 2040. So we are putting money behind those projects so that we can be as a beacon, if you like, of what can be done. I mean, it's not easy, even if you've got a lot of money, but we're trying very hard to make sure that we use that in the best way possible, and that we along the way help other people by the way that we do it, and helping our partners and our grantees along the way. So sorry, that's a bit of a long explanation back to, you know, using digital technology. But again, I mean, it's sort of a given. Do all charities use digital technology? Because I think there are still a lot of smaller charities.
You're right. Yeah.
And frankly, the people that we fund are often the smaller charities who are very local and very embedded in their communities. So a lot of them will be, you know, obviously using digital, and they'll be on the internet and things like that, because the way we operate is through our web, and applications are made through our website. But, you know, they're not using it perhaps to the best advantage. So I think there's an element to say that we should be helping them as far as we can. And so let's just say, starting with how we use digital technology, we have a most wonderful dashboard, a digital dashboard, to look at where our carbon emissions are. And so that's available actually on a public website to see what we're doing, where we're doing. It mainly focuses on things like the bridges and the properties and the investments, as to how that's how those are going, what our trajectory is, our transition plans, and everything else along the way. So that's something about being able to use that technology to be open and transparent, as we are with our grant making. Mm-hmm. But of course, we're also conscious that, you know, using technology isn't carbon neutral. It's quite an intensive carbon use. So it's important that the way that we use our technology is actually very much considered as a balancing act, certainly in terms of our own personal use. We don't have a lot of rules about not just writing thank yous and adding pictures or emojis, but mm-hmm. those are all things that people should be thinking about. And I think for smaller organizations, you know, they should be alert to the fact that you think you've all gone digital and you've all gone, you know, very sort of high tech, but actually there can be a huge cost to that in terms of your energy costs and the way general energy costs are going up. It's even more highlighted now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's loads of great points here. Thank you, Alison. And it's a very interesting perspective as a funder and as a charity yourselves, and having to deal with different stakeholders. It's some interesting challenges, I believe. And moving over to Scylla, obviously the British Youth Council perhaps is also definitely a large organization. So how have you used digital technology around tackling climate change, and you know, what is the role of your committee as part of the British Youth Council?
Thanks, Lisa. I guess I'll explain a bit about the British Youth Council as well mm-hmm. before I get started. Mm-hmm. The question. We are the British Youth Council. We are the National Youth Council of the UK. We represent young people, mainly 11 to 18, and we have, I think, just over 200 member organisations, which, you know, range from the UK Youth Parliament, the Young Mayors Network, NHS England's Youth Forum, the Bank of England Youth Forum, Girl Guiding, Scouts. There's a real mix in there. But essentially what we do is encourage young people to make social and political change. Mm-hmm. We are essentially an encouraging platform for them to campaign, to discuss issues that matter to them, to vote on issues. We run a ballot called Make Your Mark, which is with the UK Youth Parliament, and that goes to around 1 million young people annually. Mm-hmm. where they vote on the issues that matter to them. And because the nature of our charity is so youth-led and youth-orientated, mm-hmm. climate change has been on our plate for many, many years in our charity's 75-year history. I think the main way that we have been involved in tackling climate change, as I say, young people have campaigned for it. So we have spent years facilitating those campaigns. But only recently have we developed a strategy on the board to tackle climate change in our internal operations. So we've published in our annual report as trustees, an environmental impact statement, and we're going to do that annually about our environmental, you know, policy. I mean, examples from, you know, the things that we've committed to are food in in-person events will be meat-free, or, you know, we're going to have a staff engagement plan to shift behaviours and practices around climate change. Reviewing, you know, environmental commitments of our pension providers and the funds they offer, things like that. Reviewing our banking policies to ensure they align with our values. Really just looking at our internal operations with our staff team, with our trustee team as well. In terms of the digital aspect to this, we have, like many, many charities, after the pandemic, we've really taken advantage of the digital kind of world. And, you know, perhaps this, without the pandemic, perhaps that push to the digital world wouldn't have occurred. I don't know. But I think it is really great for climate change, having, you know, hundreds of young people on a call mm-hmm. that perhaps would have happened in the Midlands or in the South or the North or wherever, where they would have all had to take trains. And of course, because they are mostly under 18, they always have youth workers with them for safeguarding reasons. So there are many, many people at many of our events. So we've shifted into kind of both a digital and in-person kind of strategy for our events. For example, the really big ones like a House of Commons sitting, we can't really do that online because it is in the House of Commons. But many of our meetings are online and so much more convenient for young people who are all students predominantly and who cannot take a Tuesday evening off to, you know, take a train to Nottingham or to Cardiff. But yeah, it's been really great to embrace this kind of digital, these digital behaviours. We have been a very digital charity anyway, in terms of, you know, our websites and our campaigning. Mm-hmm. And our social media, but it's been great to kind of see this in our in our events and our meetings as well. And I think our staff and our young people have really taken it on and really run with it.
Mm-hmm. Embracing it. Yeah, this is, yeah, it's really, really interesting. And to have the perspective as well, obviously, young people and how, you know, how this has impacted them and how they can act and provide also, I suppose, ideas, because it's all about them making suggestions for also you to take it up to the powers that be and to influence and lobby for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we consulted both our staff and young people on our environmental policy, and our trustee board are all 16 to 25 anyway. So when I say young people and I use the pronoun they, I am also one of them. So I think it is really great that we can shape this policy as we like it. And it's a, you know, with all of our policies, it's a constant consultation with our young people. So I think they really value that this is one of their main priorities and they get a say, at least within our charity, about it.
Yeah, that's really important. Thank you both for giving perspective on how you've, well, obviously what your organizations are doing when it comes to tackling climate change and how you've used, you know, digital technology to help you with your mission and your initiatives. And if we take a step back, and obviously you're dealing with quite a lot of local, you know, community-led organizations. I know you mentioned, Alison, where do you think we're at as a sector in tackling climate action and becoming more sustainable? Alison, if you...
Okay, thank you. Thanks. It's interesting to hear what Scylla's saying, that great drive from the young people. And perhaps I should have said, you know, clearly you need leadership. And, you know, my board is very much leading that, but very much working with all our, we have a staff liaison group. So they're actually bringing together all the ideas and then the board are considering them. And then we're working them out through the charities. That's fantastic. So, but where is the sector? You're right. I mean, your own survey showed how much interest there was, but actually not so much action. And there are barriers because of, well, resources, frankly, you know, both money and people, just the priority of climate when there's so many other pressing issues that, you know, as we all know, you know, COVID, Brexit, the wars, cost of living crisis. It means that all charities are dealing with an awful lot more issues and there's so much more need there. And yet there's so, you know, demand for that is smaller and smaller, both in the public and the private sector and from charities to help. So I think it's still very much there. I think it's an aspiration for so many charities. Mm-hmm. And how we at City Bridge Foundation are tackling this, if you like, is that because we want to encourage people to think about their environmental footprint and the emissions, we for a long time now run eco audits, which are an extra grant. If people say, look, we just want to see where we are, and we get somebody to go in and do an audit of their property or their practices and give them lots and lots of ideas as to how they can improve things. And actually, we do send them back a year later to see how many they've actually implemented. So that's quite a sort of relatively small amount to people to actually do that work. But we also do fund organisations with larger grants, which if they've had an eco audit and it shows that if they could get an air source heat pump or solar panels or there's some other kind of, you know, double glazing, triple glazing, then we will consider funding that to them as well. So that's, you know, if you like, core funding for them, for their buildings to be improved so that they can actually reduce, ultimately, as we all know, reduce their energy costs, provide a nicer atmosphere for them to work in, or for their, even it may be somewhere where their beneficiaries are coming, you know, a church hall or something like this. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really key. So when people come, some funders aren't interested in that area, they're funding other things, but that is something that we think is important to help charities to tackle their issues. And, you know, we've roughly, from the ones that we've given, the eco audits we've done so far, we've shown that charities can save something like 13 tons of carbon emissions per annum with what we're proposing. That's on average, obviously, across relatively small charities we're working with. But, you know, obviously added up, that's important to the general overall targets, but also to the energy costs, which have just rocketed, as we know, over the last 2 or 3 years. I think the sector, if they've got the drive, you know, they've got the enthusiasm, they've got the aspiration, they don't always have the knowledge or the money, but if funders like City Bridge Foundation and there are others working in this area can help them, then that will all encourage them. And as part of the funders climate pledge, which the Association of Charitable Foundations has, now that's one of the things that we pledge to do, which is to educate and to help people in the way that we operate and to help them in their own learning and upskilling. So, you know, that's an important part of what we should do.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a great aspect, is, you know, obviously, we know that the majority of charities in the UK are rather micro and small. So, yeah, they're lacking the resources, people, and the money and the time to actually, you know, do something meaningful and powerful about it. But by having more funders like yourselves and more incentive like that, I think it can also help them start, make some progress with the strategy or have some quick wins, because obviously I'm thinking, being a small volunteer myself and in a food bank, I saw obviously the immense change there is in having a a venue location which has got the right, you know, insulation and the right type of heating for people, for beneficiaries to come and you know, and actually for even for volunteers to deliver better service. So this has, I think, funding and the move towards, you know, more funded initiatives and money available to help charities actually create the right space and upgrade their space and do something when it comes to climate change. I think this is really important. So yeah, that's a really good take on the question. And for you, Scylla, obviously you're talking with the next generation mainly, and you are part of the next generation. Where do you think we're at as a sector? Where do you think young people think the sector is at? And perhaps what do young people, you know, expect from the charities to for their role to play in that?
I think if we're talking about young people specifically, young people are very optimistic about their mm-hmm. about their in this climate conversation, I will say. So, you know, no matter how well the sector is doing, I feel that we always push and we always strive for bigger and better goals, which frankly I really admire with my generation, because you know, I don't think there's a simple pass rate or a simple bare minimum that we can achieve. I think in this, you know, in tackling climate change, I think it is really just go hard or go home. But I mean, with the sector as a whole, I will just echo everything that Alison has said, and she's put it perfectly. I do think, you know, charities do want to do something on the mm-hmm. whole. I think it is about resources, and it is about, you know, do they have the time? Do they have the money? Do they have the staff to put these things in motion? Odds are that they probably don't, especially with, you know, the pandemic, with the cost of living crisis, with everything that's been piled on with charities, perhaps, you know, less funding from funders, for grants, from the government, whatever it may be, whatever the charity, whichever sector the charity is in, you know, the chances are that they are probably struggling to prioritize mm-hmm. their environmental strategy or, you know, tackling climate change. I mean, the British Youth Council are in a unique position, whereas it is one of our core values to prioritize climate change, because, you know, our job, again, I will say, is just speaking out about the issues that matter to young people. So as long as that matters to young people, that is on the forefront of our minds. So we are perhaps a special case within the charity sector. But I will say that, you know, as you said, Lisa, the majority of charities are small local charities, and perhaps they may be thinking, right, well, we're not the National Youth Council of the country, so perhaps we don't need to, you know, do all of this and shout out about climate change, because our outreach is, you know, far smaller. But to that, I'd really just say, in the wider ecosystem of social change, I think smaller local charities are actually much more important than the great big national ones, just because they have such a powerful, you know, local outreach, and people really look up to them and trust them, and they're part of their daily lives and in their communities at, you know, such a local and personal level, that I do think, while I completely understand that resources are at an all-time low within the sector, I really do think prioritizing this is so important to changing the public perception, to changing public attitudes on climate change as a whole. So whatever they can do, I'm talking to small charities here, whatever you can do in your local communities, I really would encourage you to do it. You know, every little helps in my point of view. So even if you cannot do something great and something, you know, grand, I think even just a small, you know, a small initiative, a small event, would be honestly really great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Any Yeah, like you said, every little helps, and any small initiative, because it is local, will definitely have impact, because it will most likely have impact on the immediate community, beneficiaries, or you know, different stakeholders, and that leads us to actually quite nicely to our third question on where, you know, how can this conversation inspire our listeners and you know, all the small medium sized charities that are listening and that are wondering, okay, how can I improve our approach? How can I get our trustees on board and our volunteers on board? So I know you mentioned a couple of things there. Where do you, you know, do you think perhaps digital can play an even bigger role in how the sector can improve its approach?
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, there are plenty of things that we do alongside our environmental strategy, which doesn't take up too many of our resources. That still does align with this cause. I mean, mainly with our trustees, we are very vocal and we are very outspoken about, you know, the issues that matter to young people. So even, for example, you know, our trustees attend party conferences, which again is specific to, you know, the youth politics kind of sphere. But wherever your, you know, trustees may be, if they are attending an event, if they are networking, you know, including climate change in these conversations is, you know, is very simple and easy to do. Perhaps you are holding an event, perhaps you are, you know, perhaps it is your annual council meeting, I don't know. Whatever it may be, including that as even a small action or a small discussion will not strain resources too heavily, I think. Mm. And I think it's really important to, I mean, begin with conversations, especially if you are a charity that has not taken any action in tackling climate change. I think a conversation can be a really powerful tool to get started. I mean, taking that further with the digital aspect of things, it depends on, you know, the size of your charity. So if you're encouraging staff to work from home, you know, if you're encouraging specific types of public transport, you know, rather than flying to a certain event, perhaps we should take the train. So it's just changing behaviours and changing practices. I think that's what it's all about. It's, you know, it's kind of out with the old and in with the new, rather than we're investing in so many things and now we're, you know, there's multiple things going on and we don't know what to
do.
It's kind of, we're just replacing rather than just adding on and on and on. So I think that's a good way to look at it. But yeah, it does take a long time to get through that conversation stage. Like I said, like we had loads of conversations about strategy and about how we were going to take this. And I think, I mean, I've been on the board for 3 years now, and we started talking about it at the beginning of my term. And only in March did we release our environmental policy of this. Just because, you know, the conversations really do take up a lot of time, and you want to do it right. And you want to make sure that it's something that you can commit to. Don't overcommit, you know, don't overcommit yourself. I think that's really important as well. Try to be realistic and remember that you can always, you know, redesign your goals as time goes on.
Iterate, yep.
You know, perhaps they can be more ambitious in 2 years or 3 years. Just start with what you can do now. And I think if you sit down with your team and you brainstorm, you know, what you actually can do, I think you'd be surprised with how many, you know, small little practices, like the things I've said, that you can change. I mean, yeah, even like food, like I said at the start of today's podcast, we don't have meat-free sandwiches at our events anymore, which is such a small change that you wouldn't really notice if you went to our events. But even that, I think, is a really big thing. And it's more about, it's not the fact that we don't have meat, it's more about that kind of general now, that like atmosphere that we've created within the charity of, we are taking this seriously. And that kind of generates, you know, more inspiration with our young people, I think, where yes, we are, you know, we are listening to your, you know, priority for climate change, and then they go on and create stronger campaigns. So I think it is just a kind of atmosphere thing with behaviours and everything like that. But yeah, little changes, as I said before, go a long way.
Go a long way, definitely. Thank you, Scylla, for that. And you, Alison, perhaps from a funder perspective, where do you have any specific advice about how charities can take their first steps?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it mirrors what Scylla's said, really, which is talk about it amongst your own organisation. As I said, we at the City Bridge Foundation, we have a group of people who are all employees across the organisation who regularly meet, pledge to talk about how they can do something. As you say, those small little actions, Scylla, as well as the big, big actions that obviously do need to be made as well. But I think for every organisation, every charity, to get together and have a conversation, both the board, but also the employees, and also if you can with the people, the beneficiaries that you're working with, or with maybe your landlord if you're in a property that's got, just bring people around the table and see where you can make some improvements. And there are organisations that do help along the way. Can I mention particularly in the city, there's a charity in the city called Heart of the City. And it's aimed at working actually with SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises and businesses, really. But it does also work with charities and other organisations. And for organisations in the city, so I realise that's a square mile, that is quite a small number of people, they will do free online courses about how to look at your carbon footprint and what you can do and the steps along the way in creating a carbon, a climate action plan. But their toolkit is online for free at Heart of the City. So you don't need to be in the square mile for that. And, it's a reliable setup, I'd like to say. It's been tried and tested. I've used it myself. So it's a good resource because there's lots of stuff out there that you don't know quite where to start. And they also have a carbon calculator, going back to this digital trend. How do I know how much it costs if I have milk in my tea or not milk and, as you say, meat-free sandwiches or whatever? That will actually calculate the cost of your travelling by car or by foot or by train. And so you can say, right, yeah, that's at the end of the year, that's actually what our carbon footprint is. And, that's quite important because it's an easy guide to how to do it. Again, people are scared because they're worried about what it's going to mean. And you're not going to do it all in a day. Scylla said it took them a couple of years. Yeah, I mean, absolutely easily. Of course, we want to do everything tomorrow, but we've got to be realistic. If we can start doing one thing tomorrow and then, build on that, then that's the behaviour change that I think every organisation needs. We all need to take on board that we can change the way we do things. And charities are no different and funders are no different. And that way everybody wins at the end of the day because they've got something authentic to them about what they can do, which may not be the same as the charity next door necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good way to put it, and to reassure our listeners is it has to be something that rings true and that's authentic to your team, to your organization, and that's something that's realistic to you. So even if it's starting with really making sure that you got good recycling in place, that, like you said, your teams, that perhaps what we've done at Charity Digital, because we're also a small team, we've created a green team. So it's 4 or 5 members of staff that are meeting regularly. I think it's a couple of times a month or once a month, and they are discussing how they can support our organization become greener, be more aware of climate change. So obviously we're in an office, so how can we make sure that our impact as office tenant is is sort of more in line with our climate change principle and our sustainability principles. How we can be even more paperless. I know we charge digital, but we tend to also use quite a lot of paper as well. Our events, how can our events be greener? So I very like the mention of the meat free events that you mentioned, Scylla. That's also very quite inspiring. So there's quite a lot of a few things, but like both of you said, it mainly start with a conversation internally with beneficiaries, with trustees or stakeholders. Like, where do you see us acting in when it comes to tackling climate change? What do you think we should do, being for us like an open book at the start, and then that can help organization formulate something? And obviously we know that in many instances charities, maybe some people listening to us may be struggling to get the message across, perhaps to the board of trustees. But I think it's mainly about, you know, demystifying it. It doesn't need to be too difficult, too ambitious, too complicated. That can come, you know, stage two. But let's talk first, and let's just have a conversation and share ideas on how we can make a difference. It's been a really interesting conversation with both of you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lisa. Yeah, we've had to think about things, so thank you very much indeed for putting us on the spot and having to respond. That's kind of you.
Yeah, and share expertise. And hopefully that will have helped all of you listening to us to sort of start formulating how you think you can approach climate change as part of your organization. We thank you very much for listening to us. And our next podcast will be in the next couple of weeks. That will be a quite different topic. It will be all about Microsoft. So quite different one. But in the meantime, if you want to check out all our resources on climate change, our report about climate change in the charity sector, we'll put all of that in our resource tab. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Scylla, and thank you, Alison, for your time.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.